Recorded live in Petone, New Zealand, this is the Cinematica Podcast, your weekly guide to what's on at the movies. You can find this and all of the other episodes of the show at cinematica.co.nz. Welcome to this special edition of Cinematica, New Zealand's favourite movie podcast. My name is Dan Slevin. Last Sunday afternoon, a full house at Petone's Lighthouse Cinema were treated to a special preview screening of Jess Feast's local documentary Gardening with Soul. Following the movie, I was joined on stage by Jess, producer Vicky Pope, editor Annie Collins, and the star of the film herself, Sister Loyola Galvin, from the home of compassion in Island Bay in Wellington. The film follows Sister Loyola over a year in her award-winning garden and teaches us about nature, common sense, and spirituality. Cinematica was there to record the proceedings, and we hope you enjoy it. Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Dan Slevin, and I'm the film reviewer for Fishhead magazine here in Wellington. I'm also the producer and co-host of a weekly podcast called Cinematica, which comes out every Thursday morning. And just to let you know, and just to confirm to all of our guests here, that we are recording this event so that it can be made available via the podcast to those people who couldn't make it to the screening here this afternoon. So what we'll do is we'll start off with some questions from me for our guests, and then after we've just sort of warmed everybody up, we'll be throwing the forum open to you so that you can ask your questions, and I hope that you've got quite a few lined up. So let us commence with introductions first and foremost. I think what would be good is if we could work our way perhaps along the line here and allow our guests to introduce themselves and perhaps to say a few words about how they got involved with this particular project. And I think it's also an opportunity for individual rounds of applause for the various participants. So perhaps if we could start with Sister, if you could just introduce yourself for the audience.
I'm Sister Loyola Galvin. You've seen enough of me for one afternoon, so I don't think you might need to see very much more. But that's me. But I'm very grateful that you've come and very surprised. But it's been a very lovely experience with me working with all these lovely people. One little bit of advice that I've given to several people is if you're going to become a person with a film background, don't wait till you're 90. It's very, very demanding, but it's very, very nice. Thank you.
I'm Vicky Pope. I'm the film producer. I'm Wellington-based, and I've been working on the project with the director, Jess, who's sitting next to me, for about the last 2 years. And when we first started making the film, it actually started out as a little short film project that we were going to make that was going to be 15 minutes long. But my sort of the running joke that we have is that we should have known, working with someone who spends her time nurturing things, that the film was going to grow and turn into something much bigger. So yeah, it's been a real pleasure to be involved with the film, and really nice to be here. It's always great to show the work to an audience and have the opportunity to speak to people afterwards, so thanks for coming.
Well, before you hand the microphone over, Vicky, perhaps you could let the audience know what you've worked on before this particular project. Maybe you could tell me even, what was your first film job?
In a quite cliche way, actually, was a runner, which is where a lot of people start in the business, so which is sort of the lowest job, but actually a very important one. So that was over 10 years ago now, grabbing coffees for people and looking after people in whatever capacity they needed looking after. But I've been working in the industry for about 10, 15 years, and have just really I produced a bunch of short films for the Film Commission, and then did another lovely documentary called Trouble Is My Business some years ago, which was situated at a South Auckland high school following a an assistant principal there whose job was keeping kids out of trouble and in school. So I did that, and then another film which was a bit more of a had a bit more of a commercial bent called Two Little Boys, which was out last year, and this one as well. So those are the kind of my three main feature projects.
All right. So round of applause for Vicky. Thank you. Jess, perhaps you could introduce yourself and also give us a little bit of background and to how you got involved in this business called film.
Sure. I'm Jess Feast, and I'm the director of the film. I began working in film, I suppose, in my early 20s. My mum's a documentary maker, so I sort of had it around me from quite a young age, and started researching and interviewing for her. And I've made worked on various projects over the years, but I've got one other feature documentary called Cowboys and Communists that I made about 5 years ago. So that's my sort of independent history, I suppose. Yeah.
Right. Round of applause for Jeff. And last but definitely not least, on the end of the row, Annie, if you could introduce yourself and let the audience know who you are and where you've come from.
Kia ora koutou. My name is Annie Collins, and I'm the editor of the film. I've been in the film industry, I've been editing for almost 40 years now. Almost as long in the industry as Bill Sheet down here in the front row. And the first feature that I did some work on that you'll know about was Sleeping Dogs, not as the editor, but as an effects, a sound editor on it. And I got involved with this project because I think that it seemed to me to be a film that would embody the qualities of the Pākehā culture that that we don't think a lot about and nobody talks about very much these days, but are the things that are really important, the morality that we work with, the ethics that we work with. And when Sister Loyola said just a few minutes ago, I don't need to talk because that's me, that to me is the very best compliment that I could be paid. Thank you.
I've got one prepared question each for each of you. So if we could pass the microphone to Sister Loyola, I've got a question for you. Thank you. You watched the film again here this afternoon, and so my question is, does it still hold up? Is it still entertaining?
Well, I think it's a bit long, for one thing. And there's too much of me in it. But the thing is, I thought the most wonderful way they worked the music into it, I think that was absolutely fantastic. It was worth listening to, even if I wasn't there. The music and the scenery of Island Bay, I think, is absolutely super.
Yeah.
Don't you?
Fantastic. There's a future extension to your film career as a reviewer.
That's the thing about it is it made something out of nothing, really, with the lovely way they did it and the way they've fitted everything in.
Yeah, brilliant. Thank you. My next question is for Vicky. A year is a big commitment for a non-funded film, or a film that's essentially you're developing yourself. As a producer, what's the big challenge for you in terms of maintaining a project over that length of time? And particularly as that wasn't the original plan, was it?
Yeah, it's been 2 years. and just to give you a little bit more of the backstory, it's actually been made with a very, very tiny, small amount of money, this film. So, and Jess and I actually talked about the film. Yeah, it was over 2 years ago. We were both looking for a project that we could both collaborate on, and applied for a very small grant from Creative New Zealand together and got the funding. But at the point that we got funding, Jess was pregnant and due with her first baby. And I just got pregnant on another level with my first feature film, Two Little Boys. So I was, we both sort of got the funding and went, what are we going to do now? We're going to have to make the film, but how are we going to do that? Because we're both quite committed to our own projects of sorts. So we actually put the film down for a period, and Jess went and had her wee boy, Giotto, and I went and made Two Little Boys, and then we kind of reconnected on the other side of that. But in terms of it, the sort of length of time that the project's taken, actually a great deal of credit goes to Jess for and Sister Loyola for that, because they worked together for a long part of that period pretty much by themselves. I'm sort of there in the background supporting them. My role as a producer is sort of a supporter, so I help coordinate a bit of production if they need gear or equipment or a DOP, and I talk with Jess throughout that process. But on a documentary like this, it's a very intimate process, and so it really was Jess and a DOP and Sister Loyola working for that long stretch of 12 months or so, intermittently over that time. So it wasn't, you know, we shot I think about 33 days over the course of that year, and some other pickups past that. But so it's always had a real intimacy, the project, and it's been, in that sense, it's been a really lovely project, because we've worked with people that we trusted, the relationships have been really positive and open, and it's been a real joy in that sense, because it's been a quiet project that's taken its own time, and we've had, all along the way, we've had people come along and be part of it who care about the project and want to be involved for the right reasons, and Annie is a real case in point for that, because she's been a real special addition to our team, and is really the third member of the creative partnership that we've had on the film. So, yeah.
Cool. So, Jess, the structure of the film, the four seasons, how far into the project were you before you realised that it really did need to be that cycle needed to be complete?
It was always right from the conception. That was the idea. And even when we were thinking about this, when we did apply for the Creative New Zealand grant initially, it was going to be a short film. It was always seasonal. And I remember meeting Annie for the first time. Vicky had hooked up this sort of our meeting, because she thought very wisely that we would get on. And Annie saying, yep, I'll work, I like the project, I'll work on it, but you know it's not going to be a short film, it'll be a feature film. And me thinking, oh, really? Oh, will it? You're right. Knowing she was right, because of course if you break it down into four seasons, you're never going to get through it in 20 minutes. And it would have been a real shame if we'd attempted that. So, big, you know, she knows what she's doing.
Right. Well, my next question is for Annie. Vicky just said there were 33 days of shooting and four seasons, 12 months. As an editor, how do you approach that sort of material? Were you editing as they went, or did you wait to sort of get a whole lot of material dumped on you and then sort of wade through it?
There were 80 hours of material in the finish. When it comes in over a long period of time like that, there's a lot of stages, just grunt stages of cutting material. And the first stage is just to have a look at it. You just go and you have a bit of a chew about it and go, what have I got here? What's happening? What's going on here? What's the feel of it? And there's a whole lot of straight technical stuff, just getting it logged, because what happens in the edit room is that you get a director coming in and they'll say, yeah, that scene's beautiful that you've cut there. Now, I think we ought to come out of that by going, you remember that shot where it's a beautiful sunrise and I think we shot it in November. And I'm going, yeah. I wonder where that is. So that's there's a whole lot of that technical stuff that goes on, and then I do a whole lot of chewing about it myself, and then I invite the director in. Did I answer the question?
Almost. So what sort of shape would it have been in when you invited Jess back in to have a look at it? I mean, how long would that assembly have been?
Practically everything. And I'd done a first cut. I just chewed over the sequences, the seasons, and had a good chew through the footage and kind of put it together. And then we're looking at conceptual stuff, the ideas that Sister Loyola talks about, and having a chew through whether we had enough within the footage to make that concept work. And once I'd been through what I could do with it, then I called Jess in and we sat for a good week, wasn't it? So it must have been a good 40 hours worth of material, and we just looked through it. And every now and again we'd look at each other and we'd go, "You bored? Yep, I'm bored. Don't think that one's holding up." And I remember one day in particular, we looked through the beautiful material which the film ends with, and that material at the time was about 25 minutes in length, that sequence. And we got to the end of it as she closed the door, and I had tears running down my face. And I turned to Jess and I said, "That's the end of the film." But I didn't know up to that point, neither of us knew how the film was going to be ending. And that's how you find out.
Fantastic. Jess, Sister Loyola commented and complimented you on the music and the choice of music and how it was used in the film. Tell us a little bit about at what point did you bring a composer into the process, and how long did that process take, and what was your thinking around that?
That was very much a collaboration with Annie as well. Obviously, you get to a point where the role of music becomes quite important in terms of a stage of cutting. And so we're in the edit suite, and we're kind of both offering things, really. Annie was responsible for finding the Preisner works, which are the beautiful choral music that happens at the beginning and also during the rosary scene. And Vicky did a great job of actually getting the rights for that. That's a Polish composer. And other than that, we worked again. I think Annie brought in the Scholes, Peter Scholes stuff, which he's a New Zealand composer, and some of that was from Desperate Remedies, which is another New Zealand film, and that seemed to work really well. And then we started working with kind of piano tracks that we liked, and we sort of had these different musical voices, I suppose, in the film, wanting to keep it reasonably contained. At some point, quite near the end in a way, we started working with David Long, who is a fantastic local composer, lives in Ofiero Bay, just around the corner, so knows the landscape. And he came on board, and we had sort of placed tracks in the footage, but then he sort of rewrote, and there was a discussion that went on at that point. And I'd always felt that it was, you know, we had this sort of piano, but really feeling like it needed a guitar voice as well. It was kind of a soft warmth of that guitar, and he was the one who brought that in too. So he came up with some of those really strong themes, and that was in a discussion with us.
I think it's to everyone's credit that music from such disparate sources can still have such a unifying feel through it. So, yeah, I think it's just beautifully assembled, all of that.
I just wanted to add a little thing. You remember the scene near the front of the film where Sister is washing her hands and that? And there is a tendency when you see somebody around 90 years old, you know, wandering around their garden, the tendency is to put beautiful music over them, you know, and it's all soft and dreamy and all this sort of stuff. Well, I kind of knew this lady by the stage, And I thought, nah, you're not getting gentle music. You're getting a tango. Yeah, because this is one feisty woman, and she don't deserve that other stuff. She gets tangos.
I've got one more question for each of you before we open it up to our audience, and it's actually the same question for each one of you. So you can answer this in any way you choose. But I'm wondering what was the main thing that you learnt from the experience of working on this particular film? So, sister, you're looking at me intently. I'm sure you've got a ready answer for this. What was the main thing you learnt?
How patient people have to be when they make films with people who know nothing whatever about them. And they're just so patient. They really are. You know, you're looking at a whole lot of very special people there all around the place. But I have looked at films and thought, oh, yes, yes, that's nice. But you don't think of all the work that goes into the making of the jolly films. It's just, but you, when you have something to do with it, you start to realise all the people that are in the background. That's and the people, the competent people that are there to make a film. That's what I've learned.
Becky, what's your main learnings?
I guess for me, I'm not actually a particularly religious person, so it's quite an unusual film in some ways for me to be involved with. The thing that I've the honour of being involved with this film has been really learning so much of the place of religion in some respects and what it can offer. And I think the Sister Leola and the sisters out at the Home of Compassion are just this incredible bunch of women who are so dedicated to giving and supporting and loving in a way that I don't think we see a lot of. And I think that's a very special thing these days. And I think that's such a gift. And I've always been a bit sceptical about religion, but I feel quite differently about that now. So,
I've often thought that the word compassion was the most important word in the English language, and that this film and How Far Is Heaven, which was about the sisters in Jerusalem, were both of those films have doubly emphasised that to me. Jess, what's your? I mean, you would have lots, I'm sure.
Yeah, I was just sitting here thinking what angle to come at that from, because obviously I learnt a lot personally, as you know, very similar to Vicky, and also from a professional point of view, I think, you know, I've learnt an enormous amount. And I think to sort of sum those two up and bring them together, I think probably it's about the kind of power of collaboration, I think. Like, more than any other project I've ever worked on, I feel like this has come together as such a, you know, it's much, the parts are pretty great, but the result is greater than the sum of the parts. And because I think there's been a really special kind of way that it has worked, the way people have come to the film and contributed, each person has contributed very real skills to it. And that's everyone from Sister Leola, Annie, Vicky, to, you know, the people who designed the sound and worked. You know, it was a small crew, but I think it's really taught me to trust that process. And if you as a director, you get to work with all those different people, and to really trust and allow those people to do the best work they can do, and just trust that. That's something I'll definitely take from this process.
Annie.
Crikey.
told you beforehand that they would just be softballs.
Yeah, right. There's something that happens when you touch documentary footage, which is always about people, generally about people who are still living. And there's something about the spirit in which you approach it. And unless your spirit is right, film's not right. Yeah. That's all I got to say.
All right. Thank you. Yep. It's your turn now, ladies and gentlemen. Because we're recording this for listeners who are not here, once you've asked your question, I will attempt to repeat it so that the recording captures it. But if you have a question, please raise your hand. If you're underneath the spotlight, you might want to wave it around a little bit because I can't really see into that corner. But if you've got a question that you'd like to ask one of these ladies, then please feel free. This is your opportunity. You, sir, in the T-shirt, yes. Sure. Well, I'll try and repeat it as best I can. And it's a question, it's a gardening question, but also a sort of philosophic question as well, which was about he mentioned there's a reflection of Baxter, who also, what was it, planted sunflowers and then garlic and the non-essentials first. And so his question is about the philosophy behind the planting, am I right? Yeah, and yeah. So if you could just, we could just pass you the microphone so that you could, yeah.
Thank you. The philosophy behind having the garlic and the flowers, I have found in the gardening that I did and the gardening that I learned from my dad many years ago, was that to have flowering things that will flower at the time when the others are coming, when the vegetables are coming on, it's very important to put them both together, because we had a big flower garden as well as a vegetable garden, and the dad's thing was always, well, you've got to have the flowers to bring the bees, because we don't have anything if we don't have the bees. So we're working on bees all the time. And now that I have two beehives, it's made life a lot easier. That's really, does that answer the question?
Yeah, so the question is, to add to that, is about the other supposedly non-essential things in your life, the wants rather than the needs.
Yes, I think that sometimes, well, I can only answer that question personally, but I think it's terribly important to work, to be able to differentiate as you're going along between the wants and the needs, and when you, something that really attracts you, is it a want or a need? I've spent a lot of time on that, but I didn't want to, when I found it was going to be partially public, I didn't realise it was going to be so big. I thought, well, I don't put too much religious stuff in it that people won't understand, because I think a lot of the antipathy to religion, especially to the Catholic religion, is simply not understanding what's really behind it, and also the terrible history of all of religion. And the Catholics have got some terrible, terrible parts of history. You would accept the fact that that was the time. And, I mean, thank goodness somebody has woken up a bit since then. Does that make sense?
I think one of the great messages of the film is that you can behave religiously without necessarily having religion.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I think the more you, I have found anyway, here I am at 91, I'm learning all the time. And I think our life's meant to be like that. Keep on learning as much as you can. And that applies in all areas. Me?
Absolutely. All right. Let's. We've got a question. The glasses there. Well, that's the question. It's actually a question that I had for you as well. So the question is about, now that the film is made, how do you go about finding an audience for it, not just here in New Zealand, but internationally? Because everybody who the film touches is improved in some way. And, you know, we want as many people to experience that as possible. So what are the challenges and how are you addressing them?
Most of you will probably know, in New Zealand we've got our national release starting this week on Thursday. So locally we're going to be taking the film across the country, and we're doing quite a lot of work at the moment to profile the film and encourage people to come along. So you can all go away and tell your friends to come and see it. But internationally, there's actually quite a sort of, in some ways, quite a standardised process that you put films like this out. So we're starting by submitting the film to international film festivals, and we're targeting some of the very high-profile film festivals which specialise in documentary first up. And those film festivals, if we're selected for them, it's a great opportunity for us because a lot of they often have markets attached to them, so people come along to view the films and also buy them for their own countries. So that's a sort of an ideal scenario for us, that we get selected for a big festival, it screens, it gets good international critical acclaim, and it sells internationally through the markets that are around those film festivals. It's incredibly competitive, and often the film festivals have, you know, tens of thousands of submissions. So, and because this is quite a small and quite local film, it's going to be quite a tough brief for us to make that leap. But we really hope that someone out there will see the film and you know, find a connection with it and want to program it. Beyond that, we'll also be targeting smaller festivals and talking to other international sales agents and representatives to take the film and try and represent it to other buyers internationally so that it gets programmed on other TV networks and around the world. So, but yeah, we're really just at the very start of the process, and we've really, I mean, we've had such a big year with the film already because, you know, we basically finished the film. We've done the film festival. Now we're doing our national release, and, you know, we've all been working really hard the whole year, so but it doesn't stop. It just keeps going. So, yeah, and that's one of our next big steps, is to start pushing it out into the world. Yeah.
I thought it was so appropriate that you talked about two little boys as your, you know, you're getting pregnant with two little boys earlier on, because films are very much like children, and that you never really stop being responsible for them as a producer, and you're always trying to get them in front of people. Once the festival seasons are finished, then there's trying to make sales internationally, and then there's video.
My little boy at the top.
There's video on demand and television, and then you're trying to sell them to airlines so that they'll be playing on the backs of people's seats, and, you know, like you're always going to be chaperoning them through life.
Yeah, it's one endless way or another. It's really endless job, and you live with them. I mean, we'll still be living with the film, you know, all of us for the rest of our lives, really. And it's funny because, I mean, it's one of the nice things about films is that they resurface and they find other audiences in the very long term. So, you know, in 10 years' time, somebody will probably approach us and say, you know, we'd love to screen your film for XYZ event. And, I mean, that's one of the great pleasures of them, is that they have a very long life and they can continue to touch people in all sorts of ways. So, and it's very surprising, actually. It's one of the great things. You just never know what's going to happen next with them, really. Mm.
Let's see what more hands we can get up. Yes, you, madam, in the middle. Yeah. So the question is how much of the film was, I guess, written down in advance, and how much of it just sprang forth?
It's a good question, because I'd spent quite a lot of time with Sister Loyola before we started filming, and we'd done a lot of talking, and Sister Loyola had also done a few other interviews at the time she won the Gardener of the Year award. So I kind of had quite a good grasp on what her life story was before I started filming, the kind of key moments of her life, you know, from a biographical point of view. So I did quite a lot of mapping out of that structure prior to filming, and how those different points in time related to the seasons, and how I might do that visually in terms of what I wanted her to be doing while I was talking to her about that sort of thing. So there's quite a lot of thought behind that. And I think what was great about making this film was having that kind of seasonal structure, and then having the life story kind of fitting under that, created a really nice, quite a solid framework, and it meant that the rest of the time we could really let it go. So I knew I had sort of these touchstones, but then to be able to just go up and shoot as well, and and kind of let it roll. And I remember the first day that we ended up filming, there's quite a lot of this features in the winter season. Quite a lot of that, actually, that season was shot on day one, and I'd gone up there with the DOP to sort of have a look, because she'd never been to the Home of Compassion and she hadn't met Sister Leola. And so we were just going up to have a look around. We took the camera, thought, you know, we won't really be shooting today, we're just doing a bit of a recce. And we arrived and Sister Leola started walking and started talking and we started rolling, and that was that. It was like, right, we're off. And they're off and racing. It was great. I was like, okay, that's how it's going. It was interesting because, you know, you do this planning and you think about things, and then that's what I love about documentary. It just takes on its own life. It's wonderful.
Great. Another question from the audience. We've got, I can see a waving hand in the corner. Yes. Excellent. Two excellent gardening questions, and we'll see if we can drag out some kind of allegorical story to go along with it. So the questions are, what's your favourite vegetable, Sister Leola, and what's the vegetable you've had most difficulty with?
Growing or otherwise? my favourite vegetable. Well, you see, I was brought up by a very wonderful mum who believed that you ate what you were given. Therefore, it doesn't happen so much now, but if it was put down in front of you, that's what you ate. So I haven't any very, very wonderfully special vegetables. I enjoy all vegetables, but when I was little, I didn't like onions. And I had a reservation on onions, but if we went out to anybody's place, I was told I was to eat a small amount of onion. So I did that. And now I love onions. But the thing is, I really quite enjoy onions. So that's the second part of the question.
Are there any vegetables that you have difficulty with, from a growing point of view, or
from a growing point of view? Well, I battle at times with things that don't want frost, because we have very little frost. We have two or three decent frosts a year, but I try to, and successfully sometimes, grow things that don't want frost. So therefore, I like to get broccoli and all those things going very early, and before the butterflies come. And I have ways and means of covering them up at night, as I said, and doing various things like that. So I think as a favourite vegetable, I just like vegetables. And that's it, because I have brought up that way. And but as far as the difficulty I have with them are things, it's my own fault, because I will grow things that I know can't take frost at times, and I have to deal with them accordingly. So that's what it is. But you see, the trouble is I like challenges, even at 91.
Sister, yeah, good. That's lovely. Sister, today felt like the first day of spring out here in Wellington. So is it possible, can you sum up whether you had a good winter or not in the garden?
Oh yes, I always have a good week in the garden if I can get out there. But I don't go out on days when I know I'm going to be physically blown over, because that's stupid. For one thing, it happened to me one day on a day when I have to always qualify this. It was a day on one of those days, and anybody who lives in Wellington knows them. You have a reasonably calm day, and then there's a mighty gust that blows you over. A lot of people experience that. Well, that's what happened to me. So I try to keep away out of the garden on a try, but I have a lovely big shed, you see, and I work on seedlings and goodness knows what in there. Try to use my common sense. I've still got a little bit left.
Thank you. We've got time for maybe one or two more questions. I can see two hands, so we'll try and get both of you. If we start with you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Excellent. That's
thank you.
A lovely statement about how the film has helped you basically, you know, own your own beliefs and and your own culture. Yeah.
I'm glad that's happened. Thank you.
And one more question from you, ma'am, and then.
Well, I'm still growing in patience. when lots of people come to the garden, I'm delighted that people are interested in gardens. It's a joy because if they've got gardens on their mind, they've got something very, very special, and they've got something that's going to go on with them until they're very old, and an enjoyment. So I don't mind. I don't mind. I lose a lot of time. I lose time and all those sorts of things. But when you get to my age, you try and know what our wants and needs. That's a very good question. And also, it always comes back to me, to the question of the Sisters of Compassion. Where can you always exercise compassion? And the question of someone coming and enjoying something that, to me, is extremely enjoyable, just adds to my enjoyment. So I have to work it out. Thank you. And thank you all so much.
Excellent. Look, I've got 2 minutes left on my clock, so I can see some waving there, so we'll squeeze one more in. All right. This is an excellent marketing question there. The question is, the questioner would like to be able to share the film with her family in the UK, which is a challenge at the moment. And so she wants to know when the film will be available on DVD so she can send it to them for Christmas, probably.
I might be able to answer that. Hopefully next year. It'll probably be another 6 months or so. It might not be Christmas this year. It might be next Christmas. Yeah. We've got a website, gardeningwithsoul.co.nz, and we'll be keeping that updated with information about the film, so you'll be able to keep an eye on that. And there's also our Facebook page if you're online at any point.
Excellent. All right. Well, thanks very much. There may be time for you to catch up with our creative people outside after the screening, but we have to make room for another film in this room. Yes. So can we have one final generous round of applause for the team behind Gardening with Soul? And that was how we finished up. Gardening with Soul is playing now at selected cinemas around the country. You can find more episodes of this show by searching for Cinematica on iTunes or just by checking out our website, cinematica.co.nz. Thanks for listening, everyone, and have a great day.